I think we now are joined by the wonderful and much loved Miriam O'Callaghan. Good morning, Miriam, and thank you very much indeed for joining us on this morning's show.
Good morning, Claire, and thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be talking to you.
I'm so happy to have you on. Listen, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the book, and I'm not finished it yet, and I didn't want to spoil it by racing through it. But I just wanted to go through some of the things that might surprise people about you as a person. One is that though, you know, it said that you were from Fox Rock, you weren't actually born with a silver spoon in your mouth, really. It was quite a normal upbringing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, Claire, you know, and I think it's because I grew up in South County Dublin in Coroner's Court that people always assume you live in a mansion or something. So in the book, I explain my dad was from Kerry and he came from a very small farm in a place called Curro, not far from Castle Island. But like his grandmother, they were incredibly poor, Claire. And I write about how my great grandmother, actually six of her children, died living in this very small house at the time from TB. So I wanted to reflect that. And my dad couldn't afford to go to university. He didn't get the farm because he wasn't the eldest son. So he did what a lot of clever men and women of that generation did. He went into the civil service and he came up, and my mum was a national school teacher. She was from a little village in Leash called Ballylinan, and her dad was the Garda sergeant. So they came to Dublin, they actually met under Cleary's clock, believe it or not. And then they got married and they bought a 3-bedroom semi-detached house in Cornell's Court in 1957. And we lived there all our lives. And my mum still lives there on her own, aged 97.
She's amazing, absolutely amazing. But what might surprise people that you did a stint stacking shelves in Dunn Stores.
Yeah. Actually, do you know, I learned so much from that, Claire. So my mum, we grew up in Cornell's Court, and down the road is this amazing Dunn Stores.
Oh, it's fabulous.
It was the first huge kind of out-of-town supermarket. So when I was a student, when I was 15, and then for the next few years, myself and my sister Anne, we worked in Dunn Stores during the summer holidays, stacking shelves. And I learned so much about life during that experience. A, to work hard. B, how to stack shelves properly. And C, how to deal with a tricky customer. So it all worked really well. I learned so much in Dunn Stores.
It's a great education. I was surprised to read, because I'm lucky enough to know you and I've had some very, very good fun nights out, but I was surprised to read that you were actually quite quiet as a teenager. Not exactly the life and soul of the party, as you describe yourself.
Definitely not. I suppose I grew up one of five children, and I was the second. So I was sandwiched between my older sister, who was unbelievably brilliant. Like, she got scholarships to Cambridge when nobody did that. We all got free education. We didn't go to paid for schools. And then my sister, who was born a year younger than me, Anne, she honestly was not just clever. She looked like a movie star, Claire. So I think at that moment in my life, I was sandwiched. I was happy to be sandwiched, but I was quite shy. And my dad, being a proud Kerry man, we'd always go down during the summer holidays to Kerry for the holidays, to go to the farm, climb over the haystacks. And we used to go to a place that still exists called the Glen Eagle Hotel. And as an example of how shy I was, when I'd go in with my sisters, they'd go in and dance with lots of different people for the night. And I would walk in there, Claire, and I would go to the toilet and I would lock the cubicle door and read a book for 5 hours. Because I was too shy to be asked to dance. But like, that's just what I did.
That is just, it actually would be amazing, because when you see you on the TV, you know, you would never imagine that. You did spoke candidly, though, about the fact that when, you know, when it was something that happened to a lot of us in that time, you were away working in London and you came back and your parents noticed that you were very thin. You know, it was something we didn't talk about as much then, the fact that maybe you were trying to control your eating.
Without a doubt, I definitely had an eating disorder when I was in my teenagers. I went into UCD when I was 16 to study law. And I went to London that summer with my good friend, Geraldine Connolly, who's still my friend. And we worked in bars, and I was also a chambermaid. Another good training, can I just say? And I came back from London, I remember, just before September. And my poor father, when he picked me up from the airport, I'm 5'10½" and like incredibly tall. And I was under 7 stone, Claire. I was very, very, very thin. I was dangerously thin. And I could see him, this kind of wise Kerry man, and my mom, they were very worried about me. But you know what? They didn't panic. He just spoke to me and said, Miriam, you are now in danger of threatening your health. They took me to the GP. And in time, over a couple of years, Claire, I stopped, you know, being in control of my eating, and I put on a bit of weight, and I've never looked back. But yeah, I told that story to be honest, because I think a lot of teenagers do go through eating disorders. It's probably about insecurity and control. It's a mixture of different things.
Well, it's a good to show somebody who has got through it and successfully handled it and still open enough. So it's an important thing to mention, I thought.
Yeah, me too. And that's why I did mention it. I thought there's no point in writing your book of your life if you don't tell all the hard things and bad things along the way. And also, I hope that it would give maybe some young person who has an eating disorder like me that you can get through it and you can go on to be and live a great, happy life.
Miriam, I don't want to give too much about the book away, because I really enjoyed reading it so much. I would urge anyone who likes reading to because it's a snapshot of how we were over the last 30 years as a country as well. But oh, I stopped for a moment when I read that the first dead body you saw at only 21 was Bobby Sands. That must have been, you know, an incredible moment.
Yeah, and I was a law student at the time, but I was going out with my first husband, Tom McGurk, and he was quite a well-known journalist then, and he was going up to cover the funeral of Bobby Sands. And like, to put into context, Claire, I had hardly left Cornell's course. You know, like,
yeah.
I'd never really gone north other than to go and visit Tom's lovely parents in Tyrone. But on this day, he was covering Bobby Sands' funeral, and I remember thinking, oh my goodness, I feel so out of my depth there. There were like thousands of people at the funeral, because it was so cruel that that young guy, who wasn't much older than me, he was 27, I was 21. And I remember people were queuing up to go in and pay their respects in his home in Twinbrook, where he was lying. And somebody called Tom out of the queue because they recognised him and brought him in with me. And I remember walking into the small living room, Claire, and I had never before, you know, I'd never seen anyone dead, but to have this beautiful young man there lying, and his family were so distraught. And all I remember feeling is how angry I was on his behalf and his family's behalf that he had been allowed to die by the British state. And, you know, he was just looking for the rights he was entitled to. And in that moment, that was an act of violence against that young man. And in that moment, that kind of formed my views of non-violence going forward, Claire, because I covered the North a lot. And why I became an avid supporter of John Hume, because violence on all sides, I just felt this is what was done to this beautiful young man. And I just never thought it was the way to go. But yeah, it was
interesting. Interestingly, then you covered the North a lot, and what I was taken with, and I think a lot of people would agree with you. I mean, to me, having read it, you took both sides, but in all cases, whatever side you were reporting on, you really took the grief and the sad stories to heart, and it didn't matter which side the person was on, because unfortunately you seem to have spent a lot of time going into houses, small, modest houses, where people were in very tragic situations.
That's exactly it. You know, I covered it for about 10 years for BBC Newsnight and then with Primetime, and that was it, Claire. My abiding feeling always was that whoever had lost their lives, it was always so tragic, and it was on both sides. And by and large, you'd go into these small homes, small living rooms, and the casket, the coffin would be there. And broken-hearted parents, usually, and siblings of young men, primarily some young women, who had lost their lives. And I just remember I was always being upset. And the other thing I noticed was everyone was so lovely, even in their grief. They'd be making you tea and sandwiches. And I suppose what I really thought, and I understand the feelings and the fact that there was incredible discrimination, but I felt at the end of the day, it was just all so tragic. And in the end, for what? I feel that maybe decades earlier, it could have stopped. Maybe all the killing could have stopped. And all these beautiful young men, particularly, that they would have being now alive, maybe enjoying their children and their grandchildren. So that is why I am, and I kind of did that show in RTE to campaign for John Hume to become Ireland's greatest ever figure. Not that that mattered, but it mattered to him and it mattered to me that, you know, he had pursued a peace agreement. And look, my youngest boy is 19 now. He has no memory of any of the violence in the north, and that's terrific. And I also say in the book, I don't know what my children would have done. I've 8 of them. You know, one of them might have gone the Martin McGuinness way. One of them might have gone the John Hume way. I know that myself. They're different personalities. So I just feel sympathy and respect for everyone on all sides.
Yeah, that really comes across. And when you mention that you have 8 children, I read all the births. Miriam, I have 5 of my own, but you certainly had drama. But one thing I just wanted to pick you up on there, because, you know, just in modern times, there seems to be, I just, my own children are in their 30s now and 20s, yes. But when you came to have your second baby, there was a little delay and you were concerned at the time. And I think it might give people heart that, obviously, it worked out. You had 6 more. But do you mind just sharing that a little bit with the listeners? Because that was interesting as well.
Yeah, and it's not. It's a bit like me writing about my eating disorder. I often get embarrassed, and sometimes I feel guilty that I have 8 children. I am so aware. I chose to do a TV series years ago about people who struggle with fertility. I'm acutely aware of that. So, yeah, after I had my first daughter, Alana, that was when I was 26, and I wanted to have another child. Tom, my first husband, had 2 fabulous children from a previous marriage. And I'm still incredibly friendly with Leisha, his stepdaughter. I still regard her as my daughter. But I wanted to have another child. And it was a big gap. It was 6 years, actually, Claire. I could not get pregnant. And I was working for BBC Newsnight. And I was at a Christmas party. And there was a lovely man who used to present Newsnight called Peter Snow. And we were at a Christmas party. And he was very posh. And he kind of said to me, why aren't you having another child to be a sister or brother to Alana? And again, I was just honest. I said, I'm trying, Peter. I've been trying for years. I cannot get pregnant. And I remember that feeling of going into the bathroom, as probably a lot of women do, Claire, and realizing when it was the time of the month that I wasn't pregnant and crying in toilets, just being so sad. He said, you need my doctor because we have these problems. And sure enough, he sent me along to the doctor he had in London. And I got my little girl. He put me on fertility drugs. They were called cyclophenol. They're kind of like a Clomid. And after, 6 months, I got pregnant. But I am now his best success story.
Well, sorry, Miriam, but you should be on an ad for his medicine. Because
you
to have
a picture actually up, yeah. Here's what.
And it's funny that you had 4 girls and then 4 boys with 2 different husbands. I mean, so does that show that the men actually do determine the sex of the children?
Well, all my friends, because I do think in life you have to have a laugh. Yeah. They always go, Miriam, you're an ad for changing the partner. I have 4 girls and then I remarried and I have 4 boys. I am an example of get rid of the guy if you want to change the sex. I'm not recommending it.
I wanted to bring up your anus horribilis, and I know you've been talking a lot about this, and it must be very difficult because you're doing lots of interviews. But your beautiful sister Anne, I will never forget the photograph that was in the Sunday Independent. I wonder, do the listeners remember? She was with her 2 little children, and it was my favourite room. And oh, Miriam, she was like a movie star. And that whole part of your life was just incredibly difficult.
Yeah, and you know, she was a movie star, but you know what, Claire, she was as lovely inside as she was on the outside. I mean, long story short, I'm close to all my brother and my sisters, but we were born a year apart, kind of Irish twins, and we just also had babies at the same time. So in the early 90s, she had 2 little girls and I had 4 little girls. So we hung out together all the time. And I always remember sitting on a step outside my house one day and we were holding our babies. And she just said she didn't feel well. I didn't think anything of it. But she said she'd been feeling unwell in her tummy for years. And I actually had ulcers for years, inherited from my father, who had ulcers for years. So, of course, me, being a know-all, said, I'm sure you have an ulcer. So she went to have a gastroscopy. And, you know, I remember picking her up. She was in St. Vincent's in Dublin. And I wasn't known at the time in 1994. I was barely known at all. But she was quite known because she was the director of communications, first for Ryanair and then for the Abbey Theatre. But when I went to pick her up after her gastroscopy, I had this sinking feeling, Claire, because she was being surrounded by lots of nurses, a busy day ward, and I suspected something could be terribly wrong. Anyway, 5 months later, my beautiful 33-year-old sister Anne died of stomach cancer, leaving behind a 2- and 4-year-old little girl and a devoted husband. And in that moment, I actually couldn't believe it. I mean, I do say it's my BC and AD, but I think it's important to repeat it because it's the biggest, most devastating experience of my life. And, you know, I do always talk about my beautiful dad because 8 weeks later, I was down the west, down in Galway, got a phone call from the local post office to say my brother was looking for me because there weren't mobile phones then, really. And basically, my dad was walking out the gate to get my sister's mass card printed, and he had a stroke and he died 2 days later. So we all find ourselves once again sitting around a bed in St. Vincent's Hospital. It was absolutely devastating. And then the other thing, and I do think it's important, my dad was this beautiful, kind, quiet, caring man. He never showed his emotions, Claire. He was very reserved. And yeah, and we were in the lift in St. Vincent's the day before Anne died. And he just started to cry. Him and my mother was there and me. We were going down to get a cup of coffee in the canteen. And he said, Miriam, we're losing the jewel in our crown. We're losing the jewel in our crown. And I still, even now, I just was so upset for them because they were such good people. They came from very little, but they worked so hard, gave us everything. And I thought life came along, Claire, and kicked them in the face.
God,
and it's the only thing in life I'm angry about, but I'm still angry about it.
And so many of our listeners out there have lived through similar situations, and that probably is you know, they can relate exactly to how you feel. Miriam, your mum, 97 years of age, amazing. But really and truly, what a family she raised. As you said, from humble beginnings, your sister Margaret, who's, let's face it, a genius. And now your brother Jim. And by the way, Miriam, I'm not going to insult you by asking you how you will manage if he becomes the leader of Fianna Fáil. Because having read your book, I think that you'll give him a big hug, be very proud of him, and manage that in your wonderfully professional way, as always. But you must be so proud of him.
And also, just to mention, I have a wonderful sister, Kathleen.
Kathleen, yes, brilliant. A journalist as well.
On the gym thing, honestly, and I have written about it in the book, 4 paragraphs. Do you know what I loved yesterday? You know Marion Keyes, the great writer?
Yes.
She put up on her Instagram the page where I write about my brother, Jim, okay? Because bottom line is, I adore my brother. He is my only brother. But I'm sorry, it's a red line feminist issue for me. I have worked my butt off for years to build up a glorious career. A bit of talent, but mainly, Claire, hard work. And the idea that anyone would suggest that any woman would have her career derailed by any man, whoever that man is, that's not going to happen anymore. The patriarchy is dead. I mean, my mum was a teacher and she had to give up teaching when she got married because they had a thing called the marriage bar, and that was to preserve jobs for men. And I love men, love my dad, brother and 4 sons, but it is a red line feminist issue. We have different careers. My mum is very proud. There is a funny thing though, Claire. Whenever my brother is on the telly, now he's our only son. I have been on the telly for 32 million years. But every time Jim's on the telly, she'll text me and go, Jim's on the telly. And I go, Mom. She just loves her only son.
Listen, yeah, like, I sympathise with her. I have only one son. I think I'd be a little bit like your mum. And Miriam, I could go, I'd love to talk to you all morning. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to wind it up here. But please, I urge you, this book is so entertaining. Life, work, everything. Miriam, we're getting texts in here by the moment. Miriam is a fabulous broadcaster. Our listener has, she's so down to earth and family focused. Much loved voice, face. Thank you so very much indeed for joining us on this morning's show.
Thank you so much, Claire, for having me.